Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And today's episode is on the turn. And in it, we are going to be talking about the psychology of curiosity and how we create it to help pull readers forward. But first, we have This Week in Critiques. So I was reading this line. It was about an FBI agent, and her home was a mess, and she was looking for her phone as it was ringing. And I came across this line, and it bothered me. She found her phone under a stack of old case files. And I was like, it's a phone. Like, it's not going to be under an old stack of case files. It could have been on under last night's stack of case files. Whoa. Once again, we dropped the mic. But it just felt like it didn't fit. I mean, if the phone was dead and she was looking for it and found it there, that would have made more sense. But it was incongruent, the fact that the phone was there and had been left there recently, but the files were old, like, you know, they hadn't been looked at in a long time. So it was just a little off for me.
That's good.
As I read it. And then This Week in Writing True.
Yeah, so I just read a book called The Goose Girl by Shannon Hale. It's not, I wouldn't say this is typical of what I like to read.
Well, you did it. You just did all of Michael Crichton, right?
Yeah. So I wanted to, well, first off, just talk about the title. The title is, it's based on an old myth, which I was not familiar with. But the title was a huge turnoff for me. I had a few friends telling me, you got to read this book. It's so good. And I was like, The Goose Girl. It sounded so boring. But it's actually kind of an exciting adventure. Or not kind of. It's an exciting adventure. It's a cool story. So I wanted to point out two good moves that I thought she made. One is there's an intrigue with a... The wrong princess is going to marry the prince because of subterfuge.
Mm.
And so they got to like try and reveal that this is the wrong woman. But there's a hard deadline in that they're getting married on a specific day. And so there's urgency as we're like headed toward the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time we feel this time pressure. And I just thought it worked really well. It was a good move.
Good.
The other one... I don't know if I should tell you this. It's a slight spoiler. She's like close to this horse that like she cares about. And the author is willing to let something very bad happen to the horse. And I just felt that like it kind of shocked me because I was expecting more of like a fairy tale. And Shannon Hale was not willing to go easy on her protagonist, which is what I was expecting. And this very bad thing happens. And I was shocked. I mean, it's like almost George Martin type, but smaller. But in the middle of this book that you think of, well, this is like a young girl type book.
Uh-huh.
And she wasn't afraid to let reality hit her protagonist. Anyway, I thought that was a good move too.
Cool. All right. So the discussion, the turn and the psychology of curiosity. So the turn is a screenwriting term that you may not be familiar with. And so a lot of times this is referred to as kind of a cliffhanger. And literature doesn't have a strong reference for what the turn is, but it's something to really make the reader go, what's going to happen next? And there's a variety of different ways that drives this, but essentially what you're really trying to do is create a strong enough curiosity to pull them forward into the next part of the book. Right. And so in screenwriting, they call it the turn. Every scene needs to end with a turn, something that makes the reader go, what happens next? I need to know. Right. In writing structure, there are a couple turns that most writers are familiar with. You have your inciting incident, which is a big turn. You have your midpoint turn. Some stories will include a false victory. And then you have, of course, all is lost. And these are all big turning points where the story shifts direction and makes the reader wonder what happens next. And so in the TV show, I picked this one because it fits the title of the episode, Turn, which is about Washington spies in the Revolutionary War.
That's funny.
And So there are two of the rebel spies, two of the revolutionaries, and they're meeting in this coat closet, and they are planning to kidnap a British general. And as they're discussing it, the wife of that general overhears the conversation.
Dude, and that's based on real history?
I don't know if that scene is.
But, like, kidnapping a general.
So it was Benedict Arnold, so the traitor, who had went over. They were planning to kidnap him
and then bring
him to justice, right? So she overhears the conversation, right? But here's the thing. She hates her husband. But she's on the side of the British. That's where she lives. That's where all her money comes from. That's how she's supported. So you can see she's kind of forked on what she's going to do. And so she then invites these two people who are guests at her party to come up and talk to her. And that's the turn. You're like, which way is she going to go on this? Is she going to turn them in and get them captured and imprisoned for being spies? Or is she going to help them get rid of her husband? Like, it could go either way. That's the turn.
Wow.
Her overhearing this conversation and then making a decision to do something about it. We have the turn. Okay? So in Better Call Saul, this is one we talked about before when we talked about cliffhangers. There's a character named Chuck, and he's allergic to electricity. Like, he lives in this weird cave of a home. Everything is worked by gas power. When his friends come to visit, they have to put their cell phones in the mailbox outside before they come in, so they're not bringing anything electrical inside. And one morning, he suspects his brother's hiding something from him, and it's in the newspaper. Like, it's a big thing. So he sneaks over to his neighbor's house and steals their newspaper so he can see what his brother's done. The neighbors call the police. The police come over and they see this weird house, right? Like, everything's messed up. The electricity's all turned off. There's all kinds of propane cans. And they're like, this looks like a meth lab. And they've got the neighbor reporting him stealing. So he puts up a huge fuss. They think he's resisting. They shoot him with a taser. So you have a man who is allergic to electricity being shot with a taser. And the scene ends. That's the turn. What happens when someone allergic to electricity gets shot with a taser? All right. So, and then we have Battlestar Galactica. And so there's an outpost that is dedicated towards maintaining communication with the Cylons and the humans. And they're waiting for the ambassador, and the ambassador finally arrives. Now, if you're familiar with Battlestar Galactica, you'll know I left out some information here. And my point in leaving that information out in this of the three examples is to show you that it didn't work, that you needed more information for that turn to work. And so the extra information is that at this outpost, it has been there for 40 years, and they were going to meet with the Cylons once a year to make sure they could maintain the peace. And the Cylons never come. For 40 years straight, no one ever shows up. And then, on this day, they do.
They show up. I haven't watched that show, but I've seen that opening scene.
So, yeah. And so, with that extra information, there's a turn. But without it, it's like, okay. So
what?
Yeah. So, that now we're going to talk about the psychology of curiosity. And it deals with curiosity gaps and voids, or knowledge gaps and voids, I mean. So, curiosity is, of course, derived from the things we don't know, but there's an ocean of things that we don't know that don't kind of pique our curiosity. And what we call this is a void. The point is that if there is so much we don't know, then we kind of don't care, right? Think of it like a puzzle, right? If there's a puzzle completely undone, I'm not interested in the puzzle. I'm not a person who likes puzzles in general. But if I walk by a table and there's like three pieces not put in, it's like, you got to put those in there. You can't just leave that out. Like, it's just three. You have to do that. Can't walk past that.
Man, that's a good example.
And that is the difference between a void and a gap. A void is an undone puzzle. If that's not your thing, you have no interest. But the gap is those three pieces. And so the point is to get the audience or the reader to feel like there are three pieces left. You just have to put them in there, right? And so that is the difference between gaps and voids. And so we need to actually control that flow of information to make sure we create a gap. But at the same time, you can't give them so much that they feel like there is no gap. I know everything. I know how this ends.
And that puzzle example is good.
It's a good one, yeah. So studies have actually shown that when people track their goals, as they get really close to the end, they start to work harder and they will do more to get there. They have a stronger motivation to finish because they see I'm really close. Hmm. And so as you're telling this story, that knowledge gap is in design to create that feeling of that stronger motivation to proceed forward because you feel like I'm almost there. Right? We talked about this a little bit in set pieces where we talk about, you know, maybe the end of the story is in the next chapter, but the answer to my set piece is, right? Yeah. That's derived on the idea of a knowledge gap. There's a little gap and they could get those last three pieces of the puzzle in the next chapter. So the trick here is how much information do you give them, right? Without giving them too much. So I'm going to walk through a few examples of a stage here. So if you say, I'm going to work, that doesn't really pique anybody's interest. It's a knowledge void. There's not enough information there to really pique anyone's interest. You say, I'm going to a crime scene, maybe a little more interesting, but not a lot. But you say, I'm going to a murder crime scene. The victim is missing half his face, but we know that's not what killed him. Right?
Oh, yeah, that works.
It should pick your curiosity just a little bit. Like, wait, what's going on? Now, here's the interesting thing. What I've given you is exposition. Now, as a writer, when you first start writing it, people say, don't do exposition dumps. Doesn't work. Readers don't like it. It's boring. But what I see in a lot of early writers and even in my own work is that you tend to dump exposition just to dump exposition. You want them to know everything as opposed to saying, I am intentionally dumping enough to pick your curiosity. I could have given you more here, but if I went much more than that and told you how he actually died, curiosity's gone. You have to leave out that piece of the puzzle to drive that curiosity. Hmm. Right? And so...
Man, so Dan Brown does this. Chapter one of the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and I think of Dan Brown when I think of this topic.
Mm.
But... The chapter one ends like you see this, what appears to be a gruesome murder scene. And the very last line is, he did this to himself.
Right.
So, and all the, because there's like these weird symbols painted in blood and stuff all over the floor. Right. And so he does the exposition throughout the chapter. And then that last line is, he did this to himself.
Right.
All of a sudden you're like, what? You just tear into the next chapter.
Yeah, I think you're right. Dan Brown does this a lot. He's all about these curiosity gaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like I said, so this is kind of the exposition paradox because writers are told, don't write exposition. It bores readers. But I'm going to say, don't write exposition without purpose, right? And the purpose is not just so the reader will know. The purpose is I am building a specific curiosity gap, right? I'm not telling you about everything in my world. This is how my magic works. This is how my government works. I'm saying this chapter, I want you to walk away with this curiosity. And so you then ask what exposition leads to that curiosity and what do I leave out to make sure that you have that curiosity, right? And so I think it's a very different approach to exposition saying that you're using it intentionally to create that curiosity.
Yeah, man, I keep thinking about the puzzle example, but
like, it's a good example.
As a writer, you have a specific piece in your hand. And then and you're thinking, this is the one that I want them to be curious about, because that's where the story is headed.
Mm.
So you start putting in the pieces around that and specifically leaving that in your hand.
That one in your hand. Yeah. So it's like, it might be in chapter two or three. We haven't decided yet. So yeah. You build that puzzle around it. But again, it's much more intentional than just letting the reader know everything. It's saying, I want to make sure you don't have a void on this. Yeah. I want to make sure you've got a gap. So
that's good. Good stuff.
Now, there is another technique in creating curiosity, and this is the twist. So the twist is when you create a pattern that strongly indicates a certain direction. So much so that the audience has a confident prediction about future events. Now, you can't let this drag on very long because that's when they get bored. They're like, I know how this ends. And they walk away. And so as soon as you have set it up so they've got that confident prediction about the future event, the twist proves their prediction is wrong and will never be true. Right? You're wrong. You will never be right. And so it upends that, thus creating curiosity, be like, okay, I thought this was going to happen, and now I don't know, right? And so it creates its curiosity that way by pulling the prediction out from underneath them. So in the Game of Thrones, we've talked about this before, Ned Stark is clearly the protagonist of the first book, right? There's some spoilers here if you haven't read this or seen the show or anything. Yeah, Ned Stark, clearly the protagonist of the first book. And unlike any series I have ever read, in the first book, George Martin kills Ned Stark. I will never forget that part. I was like, what happens now? This even about anymore? He just killed the whole thing was centered on.
Oh, yeah. It's genius. Yeah.
So it was, like I said, it was a twist I didn't see coming. It contradicted everything I knew about series storytelling. So another great example is The Sixth Sense. So, again, we've got some spoilers here if you haven't seen it. So, in The Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis plays a child psychologist who's having trouble with his marriage. And in the movie, he's trying to make things better with his wife, but she seems to just keep pulling away from him. And so you can kind of have these two predictions about how it'll end. Maybe something will happen. Maybe the kid will go to her and tell him about all the great things he's done for her. And they'll get back together and have a happy ending. Or maybe get something a little more bittersweet, that he eventually accepts that she no longer loves him and he moves on and finds someone new, right? You can kind of see it going that way. And here's the twist. He's dead. Neither of those predictions will ever come through. He died, she didn't, right? There's the twist. Completely takes all of your predictions out of the story and thus creates the curiosity gap by saying that picture on the cover of the puzzle that you think you're making is incorrect.
Let me bring up something that, so there was this podcast that I listened to with Stephen Dubner, and he's the Freakonomics author.
Yeah. Is this Footy for Two? Or no?
I don't know.
You don't know?
You mean, is that the title of where it comes from?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. So I've just copied a couple of quotes.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have the source.
So how did you come across these quotes then? Just heard it somewhere and then knew that it was him. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so they talk about, like, if you think about in a basketball game, LeBron James is coming down the court and he may or may not score a point. Mm-hmm. But in basketball, if you score 1 point, well, 2 points or 3 points at a time, it's usually not that big of a deal, right? And then now you compare that to soccer, where the suspense in soccer is constantly higher because something very, like, proportionally huge can happen, which is that they can score a goal.
Right.
Like, it's big. Now, on the other hand, the downside of the soccer thing, like, the stakes are very high, so there's tons of suspense, but there's not a lot of potential for surprise because in soccer, the only thing that can happen is you can go from being down to less down or down to a tie, but you can't go from being way down to winning the game. Like, there's no potential for that kind of surprise.
Uh-huh.
So there's this balance that I just think is really interesting to think about between having suspense, meaning like there's a lot on the line, but then also having a lot of surprise. So it's like, before the event and after the event.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just thought that was an interesting concept to think about.
Yeah.
That is there potential for surprise and, you know, is there potential for suspense beforehand? Anyway, there you go.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, surprise versus suspense there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. So that is our episode on The Turn. Now, the reason I wanted to do this episode is We're going to be doing an episode on Blog Theory Part 2 based on new research and different things. And in that, we're going to be talking about the use of the turn in a blurb. And so I wanted to cover it here so you were familiar with that concept going into that next marketing episode.
Wow, excellent. This is going to be good.
So, yes. So that is the turn. And when we do our next marketing episode on Blurb Theory Part 2, we will reference you back here if you're not familiar with the term or what we're talking about there. So, as always, thanks for listening. We would love it if you would leave us a review. Tell your friends if you like the podcast. Link to one of your favorite episodes or the blog. And if you enjoy the show, check out one of our books if you want to support us. And write in if you have any suggestions on topics you want us to research and cover or comments about what you like.
And, we love hearing from you.
Yeah. And if you're interested, sign up for the newsletter. So,
thanks guys.
Yep.